Belfast Giants podcast for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's Monday, the 1st of October 2012, and my name is Patrick Smith. How's it going, guys? Back for another show. The weekend, the past, the Belfast Giants took on two Scottish opponents in the Brayhead Clan and the Fife Flyers with a 3-2 home win over the Clan and a 3-1 away win over the high-flying Fife Flyers. That sounds a bit rubbish. The High Flying Five Flyers. But this week I thought we'd pull in three fans from within the Earhart or the Southern Conference or whatever you want to refer to it, in a fan of the Nottingham Panthers, the Coventry Blaze and the Sheffield Steelers for a bit of a chat about how this first month of the league season has gone, both in general and specifically in their own teams. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can drop us an email at podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. You can go to Twitter at AVFTB, that's @AVFTB, or the website, of course, is www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. That slowed down as if I was going to forget what it was. Anyway, I will say that there's a few jokes, a bit of a laugh, a bit of a chat with these guys, and maybe a bit of language that you may not have heard in previous podcasts, or maybe you have. I think the word's industrial from time to time, but yeah, we left it in there because it was a great chat with the guys, and well, here it is. Rawr! All right, okay, so joining us for a bit of a chat, we've got a Panthers fan, a Steelers fan, and a Blaze fan. First up, I think it's back-to-back appearances on a View from the Bridge for the guy who's the man behind the Cat's Whiskers fanzine blog and the face of the Cat's Whiskers TV. It's John O'Billard. How are you doing, buddy?
Wow. Yeah, not too bad, mate. Yeah, good.
Wow. And then we've got John on as the voice of the Panthers, I thought I needed to get a Steelers fan on, so I decided I'd go for a chubby Steelers obsessed ex power play writer who lives and works down Birmingham way. But I end up with Hitchy. All right, Mark?
I'm okay. I'm a diehard fan.
Diehard fan. You're sort of like molding yourself in the whole sort of Simsy thing going on here.
No, I just look like Bruce Willis.
and finally, representing the Blaze is a guy who talks to Blaze players in bars after matches, buys them pints and sort of, films it. I don't know what to really make of that. Stuart Coles.
Evening. I'm not buying anyone drinks. That's a horrendous accusation.
Well, I've heard that about you. never sticks his hand in his pocket. Guys, we're about a month into the season so far. The new season with the divided conferences and all that sort of stuff. I'll start by asking you, Jono, who are the form teams in this first month of play? Has anybody actually really surprised you?
Let's see, Fife, I think, is the obvious one. I think they've only lost two games. And when you look at them last season, I think they finished bottom. They couldn't buy a win for most of the season. And they were the team that seemed to be the whipping boys along with the Caps. But this season, it just seems a complete change around. I think they've got a really good netminder in Brian Pitton. And I think he's winning them games. And is it the guy, Keynes, I think? Who's scoring the goals for him, Keynes or Haynes? Apologies for not knowing the names, but he's doing really, really well. So they're the big surprise. And also, I think the Blaze have been a bit of a surprise. I think everyone was expecting them to get thumped in the Erdark Conference, and they've been doing very well. And that was a great win for them on Sunday in Sheffield.
Stuart, your team sort of a surprise package?
Yeah, it's pleasantly surprising. We thought, from the quality of the imports that we'd signed, that we had a reasonable team. But particularly with the injuries that we've had at the start of the year, we didn't think, we go to Sheffield and we've got some big games. We might come out sort of 50-50 over the first month or so of the season. And we end up, we've got 10 points out of a possible 14. We've won in Sheffield, which we didn't do last year at all. We didn't beat Sheffield even in the Sky Dome. And the team spirit that they're showing, the guys, it's a massive turnaround from the last 2 years. So yeah, pleasantly surprised. And I think we have shocked a few teams.
outside of yourselves? Any other teams that you've thought yourself, I wasn't expecting that?
I have to agree with Jono. I thought Fife were excellent at Skydome. Haynes, the guy, he's good. Pitt in the netminder, his brother's not too shabby either as a forward. They look pretty tight defensively. They're a well coached side. Dutiam, Danny Stewart have got them playing sort of pretty sensible hockey. You know, and they are they came round. We beat them by a goal, but it was in the last couple, 2-3 minutes, and you know they could have easily taken the 2 points from that game without any questions. Hull were good on Saturday night at the Skydome. Had a big second period, 5 unanswered goals, and Ben Bounds was in the third period, absolutely outstanding. Mm. I think for me, really, the biggest surprise is how not good Brayhead have been. You know, they were sort of talked up as a team that potentially, you know, might dominate the Gardner Conference, and in reality, they're just a bit of a damp squib at the moment.
Mm. Mm. Hitch, you've been to a few Coventry games, and you were that Coventry Fife game, weren't you?
No, I didn't make that one, mate. Unfortunately, I had a touch of diarrhea that evening, so I couldn't make it.
Sorry to hear that.
I have been keeping in touch with the events on the Elite Show through YouTube, but I must say that the teams I've seen so far have just been Sheffield, Coventry and Nottingham. I think Coventry's spirit has probably been what stood out for me. They certainly were down on numbers the couple of times I saw them at the Sky Dome, but the kind of spirit that they had and the atmosphere there as well has definitely picked up. I guess the biggest surprise has got to be Fife. I've got to agree with the guys. I mean, you look at the Gardiner Conference, which is poorly represented on this podcast, by the way. So a bit of feedback there for you, Patrick.
Julie noted, Mark, thank you.
I'm sure the 14 people that go to attend the games in that conference will be very, very upset with their lack of presence tonight. But joking apart, I think we all expected Brayhead to walk that conference and have a great chance of winning the overall league. But yeah, it's been a bit of a surprising start, I must admit, up in Scotland and Hull.
Scotland and Hull, yeah. Well, sticking with you, Hitchy, what do you think of the conference system? Do you think it's worked, or do you think people are just confused? Because points and scoring-wise, if you look on the... there seems to be a bit of misunderstanding as to whether cross-conference points count for your conference or just count to the league and all this sort of stuff. Do you think it's just needing time to bed in, or do you think it isn't going to work?
To be honest, the 20 years I've been watching ice hockey, it's had a bit of a reputation in this country for kind of making up the rules as it goes along, doubling up cup games and league games and all this stuff. It's always been quite confusing. And for the outside observer, I guess it's going to be a challenge to try and understand. I think if they'd have done away with the overall league championship, had two conference winners and then made the end of season playoffs the true British champion, I don't think we'd have had any of these problems. I think most people would have accepted that, apart from Nottingham, who are still on that certain quest. But I don't have a problem with it, because I know there's a lot of people who don't like too many games against certain teams, but for me, it is the Sheffield-Nottingham games that seems to make our two clubs the most amount of money. And I guess they've got their financial and commercial reasons for doing that. I personally don't have an issue with it. I think it could have been fought through a little bit more carefully in terms of the Hull situation, but do you replace Hull with Belfast? Probably not, because then Belfast are in a league where it's not commercially beneficial for them. I mean, you're probably the best person to answer that kind of question.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with regards to if we were in. You just had to look at the attendances at the Odyssey against Fife and Edinburgh and Dundee, and you know, it's hard to say the words. You know, no offense to them, but you know, if the crowds aren't coming in, then they're not a box office draw. There's nothing that can be done about that, really, unless they were to up the competitiveness of their team, which obviously Fife have done. But yeah, there's a larger draw for the likes of Sheffield and Nottingham and Coventry and Cardiff, so it's rather than the likes of Hull and Brayhead were getting that sort of a draw, but the start of the season's been poor for them. Jono, the games have been very tight though in this league. Has this been one of the positives that has come out from this conference?
Yeah, and surprisingly so. I think there was a post on THF earlier today where someone was pointing this out, that of the 39 games played, 23 were decided by a single goal. So, you know, there's a lot of close games out there. And I think that has probably been the biggest shock. And that's in both conferences and cross-conference. You're not seeing many blowouts, which is probably a good thing at the moment. And, okay, it's early doors and things may change. But I think it's a very, very positive start, to be honest.
Do you think there's any confusion as to how the whole system's been set up with regards to points, or do you think it'll sort itself out?
I honestly don't think it's that confusing. It's like all games count towards the league, easy enough, and only games against your conference rivals count towards your conference. And I don't honestly see what's difficult to understand about that. But I mean, I suppose when you add in, like Itchy said, the Challenge Cup games and doubled up games, that's when you can start to get the confusion coming in.
Mm-hmm. Stu?
Yeah.
What do you think about, you know, the way the conference set up for you guys in the Blazer, and how, you know, the quest for the league title is? Does the league title still have its, you know, its status as being as big as it should be, considering there are so few games or uneven games against teams in the Gardener? I guess if this is one of the debates that will go right through the season until the champion's decided, and then whether we decide whether the champion is really the champion, because, you know, especially if it's Nottingham.
Yeah, I mean,
I won't complain.
I think
I've never known an if that big, but yeah.
I think the league title is somewhat devalued by making it an uneven spread of fixtures. I mean, I understand the conference alignment and the whole sort of financial reasons for moving to the setup, and it has generated some good games and making teams more competitive. But to award a league title based on an uneven schedule just isn't fair. I mean, the chances are the league champion this season will come from the Erhard Conference, and everyone will likely be happy with that, except if it's Nottingham.
not everyone. But,
you're all miserable up there anyway. The people on the cage will whinge anyway.
I can't argue there.
But for argument's sake, say, you know, Brayhead or Fife come through, they have a storming season, and they win the league because they rack up so many points in their conference against, you know, what are going to be likely weaker teams. Then the teams in our conference will say, well, we're still the best team, the league champion isn't right because they've played more games against worse opposition. I think to avoid that problem, Hitchy said, you know, let's, you know, have a true British champion decided by the playoffs, maybe, or work out another system in order to do it, because doing it in this way just opens up more questions than it answers.
I think one of the whole big thing when they put this conference system together was to gain that sort of, you know, these rivalries, to gain a sort of a greater excitement and to gain tighter leagues. I'll ask Hitchy, frankly, how much of a tabs you've been keeping on the Gardener Conference, honestly?
Shall I go first?
Yeah, go for it.
I am going to be honest with you. I've got the Elite League website open now, so I know what's going on it.
Sorry, say it again. You broke up.
Sorry. I was saying, I've got the Elite League website on right now because I genuinely didn't have an idea of where people were in that league and what the state of play was. I had no idea. So, no, I've not been keeping tabs on it. Just like I don't really keep tabs in non-league football.
Jono?
No, I'm similar to Itchy. I mean, the first time I looked at the Gardener Table Conference was earlier today, but I do know they have been playing a lot of Challenge Cup games rather than conference games. I mean, I think I've just got looking at the table now. I think Hull have played 4 games. Fife and Dundee only won, and Edinburgh and Bray added 2 each, because they've been mainly playing in the Challenge Cup. So, no, I haven't been looking at it, but I probably will start to pay closer attention now we're sort of further into the season.
Am I right to understand, guys, that you're going to get a trophy for winning each conference, and then you're going to get a trophy for winning the overall league? So there's going to be potentially 3 champions, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Is that not ridiculous? Is that not basically creating trophies for the sake of it?
Yeah, I mean, well, you could have a team winning both conferences and then the league champion being an entirely different team.
Theoretically, it's not
unfeasible. I mean, both Blaise and Nottingham aren't, you know, traditionally we don't do so well on those long road trips up north. You know, we drop points against teams. They come down here and we lose silly points. And Belfast tend to pick up points like that. So you could be three wins ahead in the conference, but because Belfast, say, pick up six more points or seven more points against the other opposition, they'll end up the league champions. It's silly.
But did something have to happen? Were we in a position where we had to change, the league had to restructure, and we had to find a new way to maybe develop it more commercially?
Yeah, but they could have just gone down the model of having two conferences, exactly how they've done it, but they didn't have to have an overall league champion. I just don't... There's this long-standing issue in British ice hockey where you've got location versus sport. The sport is everybody wants to win the playoffs. The guys come over from Canada, they play a whole season, they see the fans wanting the league title, yet you ask them and deep down they want to win that last game in Nottingham at the end of the season. But you've got then the British sporting culture where the league champion is the team that have been consistent over the course of a season. And for us as British sports fans, that is who we see as the number one team. If they really wanted to finally break that kind of taboo, and look what they've done in sports such as Rugby League and Rugby Union in Britain, you can finish top of the Super League or top of the Guinness Premiership, but you're not the best team. You have to then go on with the advantage to win the Grand Final. And there was an opportunity for us to do that model, or to go down the route of having two conferences and then leading to that final game of the season where the last team standing would be the British champion. And yeah, for the last couple of years, it could have been Nottingham, and that would have been horrendous. But for me, that is the best way forward. They've kind of taken... It's almost like having an affair. You've got a beautiful wife at home and you're shagging the woman in the office. You can't have it both ways. You've got to pick one or the other. And I think the Elite League have kind of taken a shortcut, and it's just... I think it's confusing, personally.
And yeah. I'm going to disagree, actually. I actually quite like it. I think we've had two seasons where we've had blowouts, uncompetitive games, and it couldn't really carry on like that. Because I think if we did stay with the 10-team system this year, they would have been teams going under. And who knows, they still may be teams go under as the season goes on. But I think having this situation where you have more competitive games against teams more of your level, I think will be better for the league. I mean, if the first month of the season is anything to go on, we've looked like we've got a competitive Hull side, a competitive Dundee, competitive Fife. Brayhead, as we said, has been surprisingly poor so far. And then you've got all the Erdal Conference, where you've got all the so-called top teams playing against each other, which will help generate the crowds. I think it needed to be done, and I think it should be given a chance.
I think you're just happy, Jonna, that you've finally got two leagues to win.
Well, there's that as well. Yeah, I mean, even then we still won't manage to win one of them. So.
Is what you're saying then, that your disagreement is the fact that you think that it had to change, it had to be in that structure, Jono? Well, what about the outcome, though? Is it not, have we not basically, you've got that toss-up between commercially viable sport and one that actually has a sort of sporting outcome? And do we have a sporting outcome with this system?
I think no. I mean, I think that's probably where it does slightly. Well, it is a bit of a downfall, because you've got you've obviously playing your own conference teams four times and the other conference twice, and because there's such a disparity in the level of teams, that's where you get a problem. I tend to agree that it probably should be the two conference winners then play off for the overall championship. I think that would be the best solution, but I think they're trying this first, and then they'll probably work towards that. But again, we know the problems that there is with ice time and that sort of thing, and that is why the playoffs was changed the way it was, which I still I personally still don't agree with that. I still think that should be a group system, because the playoffs is what you can win three games and win the playoffs.
You don't even have to win three games.
Well, you can win it on a penalty shootout, as ourselves and yourselves know, Paddy. Exactly. So,
three penalty shootouts and lose.
So, yeah, I think the ideal solution would be to have the two conference winners play off against each other in, say, a best of three series. But, you know, whether that'll happen or not remains to be seen. That, I think that for me would be the ideal.
Stu?
And then you have the playoffs at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you. The change to the conference system had to work. It had to happen for financial reasons and making the teams more competitive. But the league have ballsed it up in terms of how they're deciding the league champions and stuff. There are so many hockey leagues around the world, and they could have followed any one of a number of models, but they seem fit to, you know, we know best, we're going to do it our way. And in the end, our way is just a mash of poor organisation and thought. Lack of ice time, it's going to be difficult, you know, for guys like Nottingham and Sheffield and Belfast. You've got other commitments in the arena. They're not the primary tenant of their place. So they have to fit around things. So for them to sort of say, oh, we need two games in three, you know, two home games within a week, you know, can we have the ice? And, you know, chances are they're going to turn around and say no. You know, we've got Westlife in Belfast and they're going to sell it out or whatever. And a one-off game in a pre-arranged neutral venue would probably, you know, be a reasonable compromise between the two conference winners. But on this unbalanced schedule now, I don't like the idea of awarding it to the team that finishes top of an artificial league.
I think it's something that's basically going to be debated all the way through the season. Let's move ahead slightly and just have a quick chat, because about discipline in the Elite League, because the structure isn't the only change. I think the league are trying to be a bit more transparent. I know Simon Kirkham was brought in into the role with regards to the Elite League discipline, and even this week we've had Max Babrere given a three-game ban for a check to the head on Brock Matheson in the game against Belfast on Thursday night. I'll start with you, Jono. Has the Elite League improved in regards to discipline?
Probably. I don't know. It's very difficult to say.
Until Guillepine gets a ban, then it's a no.
I'm not seeing the Berbrier incident, so I can't really comment on it.
Released by the Cardiff Devils. Yeah. So.
I'm not personally a fan of teams citing other teams. I'd rather it was all left on the ice, and I was pretty annoyed when Nottingham cited Didier Met for the check on Lakovic, which, yeah, it was a bad check, but it was called 2 minutes for charging. He wasn't injured. Get on with it. Don't go running to the league. I really, really don't like that sort of thing. Just sort it all out on the ice. However, we've seen the kicking incident from the Edinburgh netminder, whose name I won't even try to pronounce. He got a 5-game ban for kicking, which is fair enough. And it seems that Simon Kirkham's come in and he is being more transparent. He said, right, this is what we're... It's a 3-game for a check to the head. It's 5 games for kicking. Any appeals or any disciplinary, we'll tell you about it. And I think you can't really say fairer than that at the moment. I think it has probably been an improvement. Whether it is consistent throughout the season, well, of course, that remains to be seen.
Stu, the Coventry Blaze withdrew a site on Max Berbrere again with regards to the Domish incident pre-season. Do you think that it's due to a culture thing of trying not to develop a culture of let's go back and review every single hit?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I agree with John. You shouldn't really go run into the league and asking for supplementary discipline on players if the check's been called as a penalty. I think if the referees missed it and it was a dirty hit, then I think the clubs are within their right to sort of say, you know, look, this was missed by the ref. You know, we're wanting to improve standards, because you can show it to the ref and you can have a conversation about why they didn't call it. You know, what did you see? Why didn't you call it? And you can have some sort of conversation. I think the Blaze didn't appeal that one, because I don't think it was called as a penalty. I can't really remember, to be honest. But there was a lack of, you know, real evidence to sort of substantiate whether it was or wasn't a bad hit. I don't think it was deliberate or malicious. I just think it was poorly timed.
Yeah.
And it just caught him in the head. He perhaps had his head down as well. And, you know, your players are told from an early age, keep your head up. So it's difficult. I do think that if there had been more video evidence, then they would have had that one reviewed. They would have asked to have that reviewed, personally. Because, you know, he ended up with quite a nasty injury, and he's still out now. So, and my understanding as well from the Giants Twitter feed is that Brock Mathieson hasn't played since his hit either. So,
I think he's got a concussion, a bit like, I think that's what Jeremy Domish got.
He started off that way, yeah.
Yeah, Hitch, video reviews and stuff like that. Does the Elite League need the improvements discipline from what you? Because it wasn't that long ago that Voth was getting a big ban for a blindside hit on Ashley Tate, and we seem to be revolving a lot around Cardiff here. A few other fans seem to put forward the whole idea that they're being put upon with regards to this. But do the league need to follow these sort of incidents up?
Yeah, I think the danger we have is the consistency of the footage. There's a lot of clubs who have comprehensive recording now of games at their rinks, and you have other arenas where you've got one man and a tripod. And I think the issue you've got is if you can't have a consistent coverage in terms of evidence to review as a disciplinary board or whatever, it then becomes difficult, in my opinion, to make it consistent across the league. So I'm not a fan of clubs whinging to the league saying, oh, you know, it's like children in the playground mentality. And at the end of the day, if the referees have missed it and there's no injury, then just crack on, in my opinion. I think when a player gets an injury and it actually really does affect the team moving forward, then yeah, let's have a look at it. But as I say, it's difficult to be consistent because of the different varying quality of match night coverage that the teams have to give the league.
I think I agree with you with regards to that. I think that, you know, you don't want every single hit being, you know, this hit was slightly off, this hit was slightly mistimed. You want the league to look at that, because otherwise it'll just get boring, it'll get petty, it'll get, you know, it'll be coaches coming forward and citing every single little hit just because they got cited themselves. And I don't see a reason for it to get like that. I think that, you know, like you say, if it's been missed by the referee and it caused an injury and it's thought to be bad, then maybe there's a reason. Like the Bebrera hit, I think that, I know that, again, the Cardiff fans don't like the fact, and the fact that the Cardiff Devils themselves, despite the fact that every little goal or hits or, you know, save is put on YouTube within minutes of it happening at the arena, this hit itself hasn't been put into the public domain, which goes to lead me to believe that, you know, it was a bad hit and the 3-game ban is justified. But then it wasn't called by the referee, and, you know, maybe that sort of supplementary discipline is needed. It's a fine line that you tread when you want to, you know, if you want to keep the game clean, but then you don't want it delving into some sort of petty tit-for-tat nonsense.
No, and to be honest, I was at the Nottingham-Sheffield game, and there was the usual kind of refereeing decisions, and there was the usual action on the ice in terms of the fights, and it was all part of the spectacle, and it kept the game alive for Nottingham. And I think if there's this fear that whatever you do is going to be assessed by men in suits who probably could never play the game in the first place on a Monday morning somewhere, then it'll take something away from the actual passion of the whole event. So for me, just leave it.
Well, it's not that, though. Simon Kirkham isn't a bad judge for that sort of situation, surely?
Well, he was known for swearing on grandstand, wasn't he?
Yes, that's apparently so. And of course, you were saying about that Nottingham Sheffield and the fights there. That big Shields Clark tilt, eh? That's what we were all looking forward to. I'm still looking for the YouTube footage of that. I heard it was a blinder.
If I never see that again for the rest of my life, that's not enough.
I think the best fight of the night was the Steelers bench versus the the angry fan. I kind of went quiet on that count, didn't it? But I wonder if there's video footage being assessed somewhere of that incident.
Some fans being assessed a 3-game ban.
Well, I'll say if it's against the Steelers, then whoever the opponent was will come off worst.
One of the things we move on to with regards to the Bebrere hit in Cardiff on Thursday is when he received his 3-game ban, he was straight onto Twitter, and him and Ryan Finnerty had a bit of a little loving with regards to the decision by Christensen to cite Bebrere for the hit. And he made a comment about Christensen and about the Giants and about classlessness. It leads you on to this whole new social media policy. Does it have any teeth, Hitch?
So, what, the players and the coaching staff going on social media?
No, like the Elite League's new policy to try to curb any sort of bad reflection of the league through social media on Twitter and the likes.
Well, in my opinion, I'm a massive Twitter advocate. I'm on it all the time. It's my third leg, so to speak. And I don't think these guys should really be talking about their jobs on it. I don't. If I went on Twitter and I started talking about someone that had pissed me off in the office, I would probably get disciplined for it. And I think things like social media, Facebook, Twitter, if it's done professionally, so it's a Steelers or a Panthers or a Blaze Twitter feed, which is promoting the game, or you work in the promotional aspect of the game, fair enough. But these guys, use Twitter, have banter with people, use it in your personal life. I'm not a fan of them using it to talk about the game and the sport. I'm really not, because all that does is incites people. And I think I've seen comments between players and coaching staff which have been homophobic. I've seen comments which have been talking about, when we're on the ice, I'm gonna knock you out, and all this crap between that guy down in Cardiff and that bloke that used to be in jail over in America that was going to sign for Coventry, but he's not allowed over because he's got no visa. I just think it's not good for the game. I think it makes a mockery. And if you look at football and you look at the fines that have been dished out to people like Rio Ferdinand for making comments when they shouldn't have done, I just don't think we should do it in hockey. I just think they should leave social media for personal life. And the Elite League have brought in these rules and regulations. They're not going to be abided to. And in grand Elite League tradition, they'll do nothing about it.
I think the guy with no visa, Stu, Mr. Danton, has been somebody who's very much on Twitter every 10 minutes talking about the situation. What's your take on the whole social media policy with the Elite League?
It's a bit of a farce, to be honest. They came out and they said, we're not going to let them ruin the reputation of the sport. To be fair, it's going to be quite difficult to ruin what it doesn't have. They said that they'd come down hard. They wouldn't allow this, that, and the other. And essentially, what's happened is that they're not allowed to tweet an hour before and an hour after the game. But pretty much everything else is fair game. You know, like some of the the thing that gets me the most is that some of the comments between the players and the fans. You know, some of the stuff that sort of bounces to and from. If I said that to some people at work, I'd get the sack.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there's just no call for it. You know, use social media to promote the game. Use it to drum up a bit of support. You know, big Steelers Panthers game this weekend. You know, are you coming in orange? Whatever that side of things you need to do. But if you want to trash talk another player or a coach, do that on the ice. You know, keep it for where it's meant.
Jono, Panthers of this season, I think, just come into the whole Twitter revolution with regards to their social media.
They've got into the 21st century at last, which is very welcome.
Would you say the teams? Obviously, it's an output for the officials for the teams. You know, to get promotion and whatnot. But I assume the likes of Devon Diddy Media and all gets up to isn't really what they're looking for.
No, not at all. And I mean, I have seen Didier Metti's tweets, and you just think, I'm sorry, but you're a bit of an idiot, mate. You know, I think he tweeted a picture of Danton's prison photo or police photo, and I'm sorry, but that's just bush. You don't do that. And that's just not on. And he's been, I mean, fair enough, fans have been rising to the bait and bad-mouthing him, and he's been giving them some back. Now, I'm always a big advocate. If you're going to dish it out, you've got to be able to take it back. But when you're a player in his position, I'm very surprised that the Devils haven't probably took him to one side and had a word, because he's making them look very bad with what he's putting in his tweets. And, you know, if this so-called social media policy had any teeth, then he should have been come down upon by now for some of the stuff he's been putting. But he's still carrying on, so obviously nothing's been said. So, you know, it's if you're going to make a grand gesture about a social media policy, fine. I mean, they're right. Nobody is tweeting, what is it, 2 hours before a game and an hour afterwards. I don't think I've seen that broken. Fair enough. So that's obviously worked. But then at least have the balls to do something when the players are acting out of line on Twitter outside the game time.
Yeah, I think, like you say, I think that the...
Somebody's soaring there.
I think that the... you're right, I think that, you know, the picture that Denny might have put up of Danton was one of the worst things I've seen outside of the hashtag I've got a teeling.
hashtag that's so bad.
Hashtag bleed blue.
But, you know, it's you know, you can't stop the guys from talking about, you know, doing their usual Twitter thing. But it is, you are right. If you started talking about what you're doing at work, then and it fed back to your bosses or whatever, you'd more than likely be disciplined in some sort of way. But it seems that this is just another toothless regulation from the Elite League, where, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and you're not really going to, because despite putting in a this ban, and if they're going to talk about, like you say, about the game that way outside of those hours, it's then the ban itself makes no odds.
Well, you've got to say that I did read, though, that the Nottingham Panthers have come off Facebook, so the players were poking Corey Nielsen's wife.
Hold on there, just take down this book of fan cliches, and I'll just tick. Okay, that one's been done. Can we? So then, what do we do? So then, what does the league do? How does the league deal with it? Because it does, things like that do put the league in a bad light. So, do they stop them using Twitter altogether, or do they actually
find them? Find them. Simple as that. Find a week's wages. They won't do it again.
But have they got any legs? Because would a player just turn around and say, oh, that's not me, somebody set up an account in my name? Because they're not verified, because they're not celebrities. No one outside the sport knows who they are. So it's a strange one, isn't it, with social media? Because you can always play that card of, it wasn't me.
You could, but then you only have to look at the amount of retweets that clubs do of their players' tweets to prove it actually is them. So I think that's a bit of a poor get out if they start using that one. I just think find them a week's wages.
Yeah, find them a week's wages and then use it to actually do something useful, like develop the referees.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but then great, they start idea tweeting.
They already do.
They already do. What I'm going to ask you is about your opinions on the other teams. So, we've got, like I say, myself, a Giants fan, a Panthers fan, a Steelers fan, and a Blaze fan.
I'm really not going to come out of this well, am I?
I really don't think you are. So I'll let you start. Where do the strong teams lie? What are your opinions on the other teams?
Giants, from what I've seen, probably the best I've seen so far, which isn't a lot, because I've only seen Giants, Panthers, Steelers, and Dundee. So, but out of that little lot, I think the Giants are the best team I've seen. Well organised, well drilled, decent at the back, and annoyingly, Scott Champagne looks very good for you. which he didn't for us. But, you know, for fair play, it's obviously, yeah, he obviously likes it better in Belfast, so fair play to him. But Steelers, well, Steelers netminder's poor. I think there's no getting around that. And I think he's the weak link in the team for them. Defence looks reasonable, was very, very good on Saturday night. And they've got some decent forwards, but I honestly don't think this year's Steelers team look as good as what last year's did. And Coventry, I can't really say too much about because I won't see them play until Friday. But from the results they've been picking up and considering how short bench they are, it's very, very impressive. And it's a game I'm very much looking forward to on Friday night.
Stu?
Yeah, I haven't seen Belfast and I haven't seen Nottingham yet. Like John, that's the first time I'll get to see the other side is on Friday night, assuming I manage to make it up there. Probably the best team I've seen so far are the Steelers, but I didn't find them scary impressive. They were good. You know, they've beaten us a couple of times and they weren't a bad side. But I think, you know, we edged them at the Sky Dome. They edged us at the Sky Dome by one goal and we've beaten them last weekend. When they beat us by a goal at the Sky Dome in overtime, we had two lines of forwards. The third line were a kid who's been playing for Oxford City Stars, a kid who's been playing for the ENL Blaze or National Ice, whatever they call it now. This is the ENL Blaze. And Ross Venus, who barely scratches some ice time until now. You know, that was our third line. And it took a team of, suppose, you know, with that depth and their supposed quality, they had to go to overtime to get past us. I think, you know, probably biased. In fact, no, I am biased. I think, you know, when we're fully fit, we potentially be the best team. But we're not going to be fully fit until December at the earliest. You know, Domish and Cameron are probably by the end. It's been saying they're sort of start of November time, maybe. And Paul Thompson said that Cowley would be, you know, the other side of Christmas. So, you know, we're going to be short bench for a while. Fortunately, we've got Bayrak in now. You know, he looked okay on Saturday night. I mean, he was travelling for about 18 hours and then, you know, got to Coventry at like 4 and played at 6 or something, whatever the, you know, silly time it was. So he'll help and he'll, you know, actually give us two decent lines. So yeah, I think for me it'll be Friday that's going to be the really interesting one. Really looking forward to that game and I'm hoping that I can make it up.
Cool. Hitch?
Well, I've only seen Steelers, Coventry and Nottingham, and I've been quite lucky because the three games I've been to, we've won them all. Now, for me, Nottingham must have, well, and Coventry must have added a special extra something to beat us over the weekend, because when I saw Coventry, yes, they had a lot of fight, a lot of spirit, and the young kids were doing them proud, but they just weren't defending the netminder enough, and every time they were on the penalty kill, they'd look like they were going to concede. Nottingham, to be honest, looked like they'd shed the stars. That hopefully for them, they've brought a couple, well, one guy back, and they've brought a guy in from the NHL, and hopefully for them, they'll be able to turn it around because they look pretty weak. And I was actually, I walked out of the NIC disappointed that we only won by one, because it could have been an absolute massacre if we'd have been clinical. That big tuna guy is just the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. He's like a blimp on skates. Is absolutely hilarious.
So you didn't see Pease last season, did you?
Well, Pease played in the second game when I went to see Steelers recently, and it was almost like the mascot took his head off and put a helmet on. He looks absolutely enormous, but I tell you what, he had a lot of hunger on the ice. Literally, he was very hungry.
So is it true he's got his own gravitational pull?
Oh, you've just went for the joke I was aiming for. Easy one.
To be fair, if they put the guy in net, shut out every week, because he's that big, he would fill the entire goal.
That's been done, mate. Mike Torsh is long gone.
Grand slam, grand slam.
We didn't break a rule. We didn't break a rule.
So for me, look, Coventry and Nottingham have both improved. I think Coventry, when they get to full strength, will be a force. I think they've got the right, they've got the spirit. They've got the best spirit of the teams I've seen so far, put it that way. I think Nottingham's problem is that they've needed a change and they've yearned for a bit of a change, but they've still got the same guy in charge because he's won trophies. But I still think they could do have a fresh approach to their team. Steelers.
Sorry to interrupt, Hitch, but it's interesting you say that because obviously he's injured at the moment, which is the first time since he came here in 2007 he's actually been out with an injury. And he was behind the bench on Saturday, and I thought it was a massive improvement from Panthers defensively, especially on Saturday night. It was like a different team from the week before. I couldn't believe how much better we actually looked. And I am wondering if it is because he moved behind the bench rather than doing his usual 40 minutes of ice time trying to put things right.
Well, it makes sense, but then Finity's gone behind the bench and we've gone backwards. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm not a fan of player coaches anyway, and that's a completely different topic. That I understand their worth because it saves clubs money. But you've got that guy from, what's his name, Rick Strachan, who can't keep his bloody head still on Sky Sports. It's like watching tennis while he's presenting. But for me, yeah, you've probably got a valid point. Once Nielsen's got his suit on and he's behind the bench, it could make a massive difference. Because what I noticed at the NIC a couple of weeks ago is he does like to kind of hog that limelight and he looks like he wants the glory. And I don't think that really has a positive impact because I noticed a couple of occasions where he stood up for his teammates and he was in there and he was chirping away, etc. But as a coach, step back, I believe, and get behind the bench.
Mm. The vast majority of Elite League titles have been won by a team that's coached, not player coached.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had Tomo for years and it's just used to it. But there's a massive difference in team discipline. Because the coach then isn't one of the guys. He's the coach. You know, I think, you know, up in Sheffield last season, Finity lost the room. You know, there was a spectacular collapse towards the end of the season. And the guys, you could tell from the guys on the other, they just couldn't care. And if you've got that discipline of running the club as a coach rather than the player coach, then it improves everything around it. And I think, you know, if Nielsen does step behind the bench, there's... As long as he doesn't step behind the bench to play the blimp, then they'll be okay.
Mm. I'm trying to think who the last player coach was to win the league. Ed Courtney in Belfast.
Ben Simon.
But yeah, I think in regards to the player coaches, it is, you know, it's a financial thing more than anything over here, isn't it? I think with regards to Nielsen, you're absolutely right. I think. He always seems to want that 40, 50, sometimes even 60 minutes of ice time. You know, he ever present on the ice, and sometimes to the detriment, it seems, to the of the Panthers' defence. How did the NHLer look?
He was good. He looked a bit rusty. He's obviously not played since April, so he was. But he was good. I mean, you could tell he was a different level to anybody else on the ice. But that was also a problem as well because he was just one step ahead of everybody. He's a line mate. He got moved lines to be on with Speedy, a line mate. So he ended up on the line with Francis and Lakovich. But no, I think once he gets fit, so I would think probably by Friday, he will be hopefully firing on all cylinders because he'll have had a week of training, he'll have had a couple of games under his belt, and we should see how good he is. He's very quick. He's not frightened to play the body, and his stick handling was a different level. So I'm really excited to see how well he does. Depending on who you talk to about the lockout, he'll be here all season or he'll be here till next week. So who knows how long we'll have him. We'll just hope he's around as long as possible.
I'll ask a quick question then with regards to the NHLers and regards to what's happening over in the States. Does, for the sake of the product on the ice, does the Elite League make a special dispensation with regards to bringing in temporary imports who become available, be them NHLers or be them like top line AHLs, or is that unfair on teams that maybe can't afford them?
Yeah, I think that's unfair on other teams. I don't see why you should have special dispensation. There are import rules there, so as long as they're adhered to, I don't see what the problem is. The only problem I have is that if teams start bringing them over when they can't really afford them. I think as long as the teams who are bringing them in can afford to pay all their players and there's no financial issues, then fine. I don't see what the problem is.
I mean, the NHLPA will pay their insurance if they meet a certain criteria. So if you can find an import who's played enough games or been on the roster for enough number of days, then you find an import who's willing to come over for beer money and a few games, then most teams could probably do it. The number of imports should be set and should be kept. Mm-hmm. You know, we shouldn't make any dispensation. The league rules are there. I mean, we do have a history of changing the rules as we go along, but at least let's try and keep one of them in place. And I don't, you know, we don't have a wage cap, so you know there's no issues there about teams. And like you said, it must be as long as the teams don't go bust, because that's just stupid. That just makes the whole league look a little bit amateur.
We've never had a wage cap.
No.
Yes, so there speaks the Sheffield fan. What do you think, Hitchy? Surely, you know, you've had a sort of a love-hate relationship with this sport over the last couple of years. Surely bringing in players of that status and that level would be, you know, it'd be attractive to maybe bring in a few fans back to the sport?
Well, you know, the year when Fleury was over here, Wade Bielak and all those guys, it was great to see that level of quality, and I'm sure it really had a positive influence on some of the younger British kids who got to play alongside them. Did it increase the crowds? I can't remember. I can't remember if it did. The casual fan might have attended the odd game more, but I don't think it gave us amazing amounts of publicity. There was probably the odd article in the Telegraph. I would like, if possible, if this was to become serious and say 10, 15 NHL players decided they were going to come over to Britain, why not let the league run it? Why not let them come to the league and almost like as a franchise and distribute these players around the league to make it fair? Because if they're going to come over for a set amount of money, beer money, so to speak, then it's just as nice living in Edinburgh as it is living in somewhere like Sheffield. So Hull is, you know, Hull, people call Hull the Vegas of Britain. It's a gorgeous place with gorgeous people. But yes, there's an opportunity to spread them around, because if I remember back, I don't think Sheffield actually brought any NHL guys in that year.
No.
So
Nottingham brought three in and they still didn't win anything.
There you go. So
that was because everybody else was injured, to be fair. It was just them three, that was it, and a netminder.
And he was injured.
Yeah, and he became injured in the playoffs, yeah.
But you know, why not? Why not distribute them? There's a lot of talk about Saric's brother, because obviously there's a link there, which is blood. Coming to Sheffield if needs be. I don't really care. Just because these guys are on an EA Sports game doesn't mean they're the be-all and end-all. I'd rather see a group of local kids mixed in with the odd import that wanted to come here in the first place, really trying to win championships. I'm not too concerned about somebody coming over because his day job's on hold over in America. If you want to watch the NHL, then, you know, subscribe to Premier Sports. They don't broadcast in high definition, but it's still quite a good product.
There you go, Mark Hitchcock, who'd rather watch Jason Hewitt than Sidney Crosby.
Well, do you know what? Jason Hewitt scored an absolute belter at the NIC, as Jono will testify, and that was as good as any guy in the NHL could do. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
I hate Jason Hewitt.
I once, I think it was in Belfast when Sheffield were playing. I don't hang around in bathrooms, but in the bar afterwards, I went to the toilet and there was a guy just chatting. You're half pissed, and the fella goes, "Do you enjoy it?" The guy goes, "Do you enjoy that game?" He says, "I did," and the fella says, "What do you think of the Sheffield team?" I went, I think you need to change some of your lesser Brits, and I don't think they're really cutting it at that moment. Ian, the whole man, which a lot of you know, came in and he was listening to the conversation. And I turned to the fella and I said, like that guy, Jason Hewitt, he's pretty rubbish. I think he needs to get rid of. The guy washed his hands and walked out, and Ian fell about laughing because I just told Jason Hewitt that he was shit.
The truth hurts.
It does. But on that note, gentlemen, I think it's time we wrapped up. I just want to say thanks very much. It's been very interesting chatting to you. Jono, what's next for you? You got when's the next edition of the Cat's Whiskers TV? Because I think of course
Itchy's not on this week.
I know, I was gonna say he made such a good prediction last week.
Can I just say my prediction stood. I said I wasn't confident about the netminder, but if he upped his game, there was a chance we'd win, and he didn't have a bad game. He had a good game, and it made the difference.
He had a reasonable game in Nottingham. He did. I won't deny that. Still don't rate him. Like, but
how much of a draw was Hitchy to the Cats Whiskers TV, considering how bad Owen Bradley's jumper was?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's obviously now set the benchmark for bad clothing on the show. So look out for more bad clothing in the weeks to come to try and top that. So we will be going out on Thursday, hopefully this week, because obviously we've got a game tomorrow. So we want to cover that. We'll be filming on Wednesday night to hopefully go out Thursday. But plenty of interviews. We've got a feature with Simsy. We've got a few interviews from after the game on Saturday with some of the players, and we've also featuring the Nottingham Lions as well this week, and we interviewed Panthers legend Simon Hunt, who I don't know how many out there will know him. He used to play for the Panthers 12 years ago. I'm sure Hitchy remembers him.
I do, original fat lad.
Yeah, he's not looking bad. He's nearly 40. He's playing for the Lions. It's like he never left the ice after 12 years away. But we had a really good chat with him. So yeah, it should be a really, really good show this week.
Fantastic. That's out on Thursday on the Cats Whiskers fanzine.
Yeah, yes, it will be.
Fantastic. Stu, what's next for you? More interviews and bars of Blaze players?
Yeah, pretty much. We'll be after the game on Sunday night. We'll chat with Man of the Match there. We'll do the interview with Tomo beforehand, and there'll be some stuff going up on the YouTube channel for the Blaze with interviews with players after the game as well. But they're not filmed in the bar. Just to clarify that there, and maybe some other stuff too. We've got I'm going to plug our magazine as well. If you see it, buy it. It's pretty good. If you're in the Skydo, I like it. But I would, because I write it, or some of it. It's called On Fire.
On Fire?
Yeah.
Can I plug Top Shelf magazine for Belfast Giants? It's good. I write in it.
Top Shelf?
It is, yeah. It's called Top Shelf magazine. It's not a Top Shelf magazine. It's called just called...
did you say you write in it?
Yeah.
So it's full of tits.
Oh dear. And what's next for you, Hitchy? More just cold calling?
Lots of cold calling. Not going to a game this weekend. I'm not going to Wales. That's just a blanket thing that I do with my life. Not just about the hockey. But you know, it's this season for me personally. I'm trying to balance watching the Steelers with watching League One's most exciting football team, Doncaster Rovers. So I'm actually going to be down in Nottingham very shortly to see Donny versus Notts County. So if Jono is up for spending some time in the away end seeing the mighty Rovers, Dean Saunders' Barmy Army, he's very welcome to come and join us in the away end.
If you think I'm setting foot in Lego Lane, you've got another thing coming.
And on that note, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, buddy.
No worries. Against the world, and steal you around.